Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Coming up today, we're going to hear Florida This Week from Friday night on WEDU-TV, the PBS station, and we'll hear from both a Democrat and a Republican about the efforts to get the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn the election results. Just one of the topics that we'll talk about. We'll also hear about PolitiFact's Lie of the Year and how dark money is influencing elections here in Florida. As we listen back to the program, too, send us an email about what your thoughts are. Send it to dj@wmnf.org. Before we get to Florida This Week, let's hear one listener comment. Last Friday, we heard a talk by Sacha Baron Cohen about the dangers of big social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter. And after the playing of the speech, we heard from callers who were commenting about social media. And here's a caller who is commenting about a caller.
This is Andrew in Hardy County. Just one response on Friday's broadcast, which overall was great. Your fellow who is a Facebook employee or whatever, who was speaking sympathetically about the about social media. I don't use social media at all. I don't like Mr. Zuckerberg or any of his friends and relatives. And people who are not in the clear on this yet need to read Shoshana Zuboff's The Age of Surveillance Capitalism. Professor Zuboff has made very clear what the actual aims and purposes of the social media organizations are. And although it'll ruin your sleep for a couple of weeks, everybody needs to read that book. And Professor Zuboff is a professor emerita from the Harvard Business School, and she was there for a full career.
Well, that was a comment about last Friday's program. If you want to comment about today's show, please send us an email to dj@wmnf.org. Here is Florida This Week on 88.5 FM. Coming up, PolitiFact reveals its lie of the year. Many high-profile Florida Republicans backed that Texas lawsuit to try to overturn the presidential election results, and the mystery of how dark money was used to create an election upset in South Florida. Our guests are PolitiFact's Katie Sanders, Republican activist Danny Kushmer, Democratic State Senator Daryl Rousson, and Politico's Matt Dixon. Coming up next on Florida This Week. Welcome back. There was good news this week as batches of the first vaccine for coronavirus arrived in cities around the country and here in Florida. Healthcare workers and residents of long-term facilities were given the highest priority for receiving the shots. More questions were raised this week about how transparent the DeSantis administration has been about the actual number of COVID cases and the number of deaths in the state. The South Florida Sun Sentinel newspaper has been doing a series of investigative reports suggesting the state is not being straight with the public in conveying the numbers. The newspaper reported this week that in the days just prior to the November election, the number of COVID cases reported in Florida dropped significantly because backlog deaths were simply not counted from October 24th through November 17th. That lower death count made Florida's COVID situation appear to be better than it actually was. PolitiFact, the Pulitzer Prize-winning fact-checking organization based in St. Petersburg, chooses a lie of the year every December, and this year they chose downplaying and denial of the coronavirus pandemic. Katie Sanders is the managing editor of PolitiFact, and she joins us now to talk about the choice. Katie, welcome back to Florida This Week. Great to see you.
Great to see you again. Thanks for having me.
So how did the staff there at PolitiFact decide that this was the most important lie to highlight this year?
Well, frankly, we were overwhelmed by the number and volume of coronavirus claims all year long. We fact-checked more than 530 COVID claims that were either rated mostly false, false, or pants on fire. So it was just constant. And you know, you might think, well, then it must have been an easy choice. There was frankly a lot of competition once the PolitiFact editors got together around mid-November to start talking about what we wanted to elevate to Lie of the Year. But ultimately, we had almost, at that point, we were on our way to 300,000 people dying from the disease over the course of the year. We've now passed that. It's really hard to justify choosing anything else when some of those deaths surely could have been prevented with strong guidance and people who were not creating this environment where you could deny what was really happening.
How widespread was this disinformation about COVID that you're claiming or saying was the lie of the year?
I think it was inescapable. Certainly, a big person in our story is President Donald Trump, who, as president, sets the tone for how the country should respond. And he had, for a while there, daily press briefings to talk about the threat. But at the same time, he would undercut CDC guidance. He would raise and embrace skeptics online with his Twitter account. He really did a lot to perpetuate a number of falsehoods, some that he just found, some that he invented, about the virus. Surely that had an effect. You saw other governors embrace this thinking, U.S. senators. But really, you also saw just a lot of anonymous people on Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, who would distort what the casual eye might look like something that really came from the Centers for Disease Control, but was being taken totally out of context. We saw that happen again and again with claims that attacked hospitals and said that the deaths were just not really happening to the degree that they were.
It's interesting because the president appeared to understand the problem when he spoke with Bob Woodward off the record, and then Woodward published the information in his book. But when the president was public, of course, he downplayed it. So what were the consequences? I mean, did you look at people that might have been affected by the misinformation?
We did a lot of research into what the effect of this was. You know, it's hard to say with certainty how many deaths could have been prevented, right? But when we went through news archives, we found examples of people who thought that they didn't need to wear a mask, that it was being overhyped to hurt the president's reelection chances. And then we found a lot of examples of people who regretted that choice. The lead of our story opens up with a man from Jupiter, Florida, who, along with his wife, he said they tended to believe the theories out there that this wasn't what the government was making it out to be. They believed a number of conspiracy theories, frankly. And his wife actually died. They both caught the virus. He was a taxi driver. They both caught it, and she struggled because she had underlying conditions. And he had a viral Facebook post after the fact saying, "I was wrong. We need to take this more seriously." We found a lot of examples like that.
So what do you say to people who say, what right does PolitiFact have to decide what the lie of the year was? What makes you experts on lies?
Well, we have been doing this since 2009, and we try not to elevate a lie or falsehood that is, you know, something that didn't really matter. We're looking for something that mattered. And so, like I said, we've been fact-checking hundreds of claims about the coronavirus this year alone. And we can just tell you that for all of the falsehoods that we've seen this year, there's really nothing that rises above that. And so I think that, you know, everybody's free to have their own reaction. They can have their own opinion about what the lie of the year should be. But we do this professionally every day with a pretty large team. And we've been doing it since 2007. So that's where our credentials are coming from.
So what do readers say about it? Did readers have, did they agree with you, or did they have their own idea about what the most important lie was this year?
So we did it a little differently. In most years, we present them with a ballot. And as they're making their choice, they're casting their votes. We've already made our choice, and we're making our case for what we think it should be. And then we announce both at the same time. And this year, we just felt so strongly that there were really just a few serious contenders. We wrote the story and then asked if they agreed. And so about 40% said, yeah, you chose the right thing. Another 50% said they would have chosen President Trump's insistence that he won re-election or that the election was rigged against him. And I understand where they're coming from, too. That was certainly a really close contender for determining this year's lie of the year. But I think in our story, we explain that so far the protections enshrined in our democracy are holding against that false claim. But you can't have a democracy if you don't have people.
Katie Sanders, thank you very much. Happy holidays.
Thank you so much. You too.
Joining us for a discussion about COVID and about the presidential election, our State Senator Darryl Roussan, who represents District 19 in the state legislature. His district spans both Pinellas and Hillsborough counties. And Danny Cushmer is a businessman and a farmer who's a partner with Florida Horizon. That's a group that works with small businesses throughout the state. And thank you both for coming on Florida This Week. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
Danny, let's start with the PolitiFact's choice of Lie of the Year, the disinformation about COVID-19. What do you think about that, the time selecting that as the Lie of the Year?
Well, I think what's really frustrating is, let's go back to, let's say, May and June, when all the national media outlets was saying there is no way, no possibility that we can have a vaccine by the end of the year. It's never been done, and of course it cannot happen. And here we are a week before Christmas and 2 weeks before the end of the year. We've got a vaccine. In fact, the vice president and the first, second lady and the attorney general, or doctor, you know, our chief doctor in America has taken that vaccine today. So there is a lot of disinformation out there. And I think it was used as a political ploy way too much. And I look at Operation Warp Speed and I think, you know what, here's the perfect example of not when government gets involved, but when government gets out of the way. Yes, the government put tons of our money into this program. There's no doubt we pre-bought all of these vaccines and certainly made it conducive to these companies to create it. But then we got out of the way. We brought FDA back. We said, look, you know, let's stop this bureaucratic nightmare that takes 4 to 10 years to create anything, get through the system. And we did that. And it's so exciting to see. It shows that it can be done. And with good old American ingenuity and taking the constraints that we've put upon many of our companies through government, taking them away.
Okay.
Look where we are today.
All right. Well, Senator, let me ask you about that. I think everybody's cheering the good news about the vaccine. But do you think that the problems that we're having with COVID, we're now having another spike in cases, and this spike is going to last at least until February. Could the degree of seriousness of the COVID outbreak have been limited if people hadn't spread disinformation?
I do think it could have been more limited, more restricted, smaller, if disinformation had not been spread. Look, all with social media and all of the different outlets for information, we're bombarded with it 28 hours a day. And people need to filter their information sources. You know, instead of using it as a political football, you need to listen to the medical experts, the scientists, the immunologists. They're the ones who worked on this thing and got this vaccine out in warp speed, but taking precautions such as the trials and going through the trials and making sure of adverse reactions before they go to the FDA for approval. But disinformation is around us all the time, and we need to filter our informational sources.
So how do we do that? How do we make the public understand the difference between quality information and information that's politicized or non-factual? And Danny, let me go to you on that one.
You know, Rob, that is about the million-dollar question. And today, with social media being so pervasive, is how do you do that? You know, in the Cushmer household, we certainly have our social media. We look at those things, but we also watch the local news. I think what's really important in our household is our local news. And we seem to see a little bit more honest reporting from our local folks. You get in the national news and both sides, whether it's Fox, whether it's CNN, they have their agenda. And we all know that. And I lean one way, but, you know, we have an agenda there. So it's tough. I would encourage people really just to catch up on your local people, talk to your doctor, talk to the people that's in your sphere of influence and talk to people or listen to people that have actually gone through this disease itself. I've seen, we were watching a few videos this morning, my wife and I, of a couple couples that have gone through COVID, their family, and they're fine. They're great. But it was an ordeal for a couple weeks. So just to understand what the virus can do to you, you've got to understand. You got to watch your local sources.
All right. So, Daryl, let me ask you.
The common denominator between all those stations is Dr. Fauci. He was on all of them. He is the expert. And we should listen to our medical scientists.
Okay, Daryl, let me ask you about the decision by Florida's Attorney General Ashley Moody and most of the Republican members of our congressional delegation to join with the Texas Attorney General to ask the Supreme Court to overturn or at least challenge the results of the elections in Georgia and Pennsylvania, Wisconsin and Michigan. What do you make of the decision of these politicians to do that?
Well, I think I am disappointed professionally that our attorney general would join a suit that was really frivolous from the beginning. I don't blame a person for using the judicial process appropriately and challenging results that they feel should be another way. But what I do resent is them characterizing the most secure, the most safe election in the history of this country as being rampant and widespread fraud without one scintilla of factual evidence to come forward. And then when 30 different courts have kicked you out, you know, why are you still trying? Biden has won 3 or 4 times, over and over and over again he's won. Let's move on.
Danny, what would you say? I mean, the courts at the local level in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Georgia all looked at these cases and said, no, we're not going to advance the case.
Sure. And with all due respect to the senator, you know, I was very encouraged to see our attorney general step up and join that lawsuit. You know, it's not frivolous when you're looking at the Constitution, and the U.S. Constitution applies to all 50 states. And while our elections, our national elections via the Constitution is delegated to the states, it has to work for all 50 of us. So if Texas, if Florida, and the 27 states that jumped on board of this felt that they had been disenfranchised by a vote in Georgia or Michigan or Pennsylvania, then they have a right to redress. So I was encouraged to do that. Now, I believe the courts, you know, they're just like anybody else, and they don't want to overturn an election. I mean, the people did speak. I personally believe there has been a lot of abuse. I think there was a lot of fraud, and I don't think there's enough time to be able to mount that case to prove it. But they had to try.
Danny, isn't it up to President Trump's attorneys to present that evidence in court? And they did not present it in court. And the court said, you've brought no evidence forward, so we can't go ahead with your case. So it was up to Rudy Giuliani and others to provide the evidence, right?
Absolutely.
And there's no proof, and
they haven't proven into the court as of yet. That is correct, but they still have time. They're still mounting a defense. They have until January 20th, as according to the Constitution, that is the most hard fact date that we have to deal with, and that is when we'll inaugurate Joe Biden if he truly is the 46th president. As most people, I hope, we accept that and we move on when that day comes around. But until then, you know, I believe due process has to go through. We have to go through that process.
Daryl, what do you think about
November 3rd was a hard fact date. December 14th, when the Electoral College met, was a hard fact date. So January 20th is not the only hard fact date. This election has been won several times, many times, I would assert, by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And graciousness in losing is as much a value as celebration in winning.
Danny, we have 30 seconds. You can wrap it up, Danny, if you want.
Well, sure, it is important, but November 3rd was Election Day, but we were still accepting ballots on the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and on. We changed the rules moving on to this election because of COVID. We used COVID as a backdrop. And I think it was wrong. I think it's more important to get it right than to change the rules during this process. And I think there's enough out there to question the outcome.
All right.
And I don't want to question the outcome.
We'll see where it goes. Thank you both for joining us on Florida This Week.
Thank you.
Ever since the November election, there's been a mystery in South Florida. An incumbent state senator lost his race for re-election by just 32 votes. The race was unusual because it featured a Democratic incumbent and an independent who had the same last name as that incumbent and a Republican. The Republican won. But the mystery is, how did the third candidate with the same last name as the incumbent get into the race and fund their campaign? Here to look at it is Matt Dixon. He's a senior reporter at Politico Florida and has been covering the story. Matt, good to see you again. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I gave the barest of facts. Tell us more. Tell us a little bit more about this case.
Well, what is interesting is there was considered three really competitive state Senate races in Florida this cycle, one of which you mentioned was down in South Florida featuring an incumbent Democrat named Jose Javier Rodriguez versus a Republican who ended up winning by 32 votes. What made the race notable, as you sort of implied there, is the idea that there was hundreds of thousands of dollars of mailers sent in that race supporting a candidate with no party affiliation. And just to sort of put a finer point on it, this candidate with no party affiliation didn't campaign, had sort of no forward-facing messaging, didn't really talk to voters, didn't talk to the media. It's been kind of concluded it was a sham candidate, sort of built up to pull votes from the Democrat to help the Republican. And that's actually kind of under investigation by the state attorney down in Miami-Dade County right now. And there's a lot of questions about how exactly this happened, because there was a wave of untraceable political mail that helped the Republican candidate, and we still quite haven't gotten to the bottom of who exactly was behind that.
Do we have any idea how much money was spent on behalf of this candidate whose name was Alex Rodriguez?
And not specifically with that race. We do know this sort of scheme of dark money mail actually targeted three state Senate races, three very key state Senate races where Republicans and Democrats were competing very hard, and they could have been won by either. The other two races, it didn't matter. The Republican candidate won by a very wide margin, and it didn't seem impactful. But this one Miami seat with Jose Javier Rodriguez, it seemed to matter. I couldn't tell you, and I don't think anyone else can, specifically how much money was spent on that one race. But collectively among the three state Senate races, it was about $550,000, which is a significant amount of political mail. That'll buy you a lot of mail.
That's a lot of money. Now you called it dark money. What does that mean? Where did this money come from?
Well, we have no idea. When the general generic term in sort of political parlance is dark money, is money where the donor doesn't necessarily have to disclose where it came from, doesn't have to disclose other donors or the source of the actual money. So this money does show up on campaign finance reports, but the donor itself is listed as an entity. Initially, it was an entity listed as just Proclivity, just that one word, and it was tied to a UPS box in Atlanta. Just last week, they amended the report to change the name of the donor, and that was tied to a UPS box in Colorado. So all we know about the donor at this point is they're nonprofits who under federal law don't have to disclose their donors, and the only address they list is UPS boxes. So if you believe that a UPS box spent $550,000 on Florida political mail, this makes sense. If you don't think that's possible, there's a lot of questions.
How do Florida's dark money regulations compare to dark money regulations in other states?
Well, Florida largely is kind of the wild, wild west of campaign finance, in the sense that anyone, you can come with a check for as much as you want and give to someone's political committee. That can be seen. A lot of the dark money stuff, which has a huge role in a lot of Florida politics, you know, from the local up to the state level, is dictated by federal guidelines to a degree, because it's a lot of nonprofits involved. So there is certainly no desire, or there hasn't been in the past at least, for the state lawmakers or the legislature to sort of crack down on the idea of untraceable money in politics. But a lot of it is dictated at the federal level and nonprofit law and things like that. I think the Florida legislature could potentially take some action, but there has been no appetite for that in the past few years.
So if this practice is legal and this money was funneled into this state Senate race in South Florida, these three state Senate races, is there any investigation? Is there any reason to investigate wrongdoing, or is this just the way things are in Florida?
Well, the money itself is not illegal. The Miami Herald has reported the state attorney in Miami is investigating the case you talked about, that the Jose Javier Rodriguez race, where it was a 32-vote margin. But it's believed that that has to do with things like the NPA candidate filling out election documents with wrong addresses and a couple other wrong things on that. So when you fill out an election document when you run for office, it's under oath. You got to tell the truth. So our understanding through some good reporting by the Miami Herald is there might be an investigation going into that, but it's not about the idea of this untraceable money. It's about the idea of lying on election documents.
Well, Matt Dixon, thanks a lot for coming on Florida This Week. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you guys as well. Thanks for having me.
Finally, the Kane Mason family, seven talented siblings from Nottingham, England, have released a new classical music album and a video. We leave you with their version of Bob Marley's redemption song. Enjoy and have a wonderful holiday. I just love the way they do that. That's the Kane Mason family doing Bob Marley's redemption song. Wow. Well, you've been listening to Florida This Week, and if you want to comment about the program, you can email us here in the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. And my guests on that program were Katie Sanders from PolitiFact, State Senator Daryl Roussan, who's a Democrat, Danny Kushmer, who's a businessman and a Republican, and Matt Dixon, who's a reporter for Politico. We talked about the lie of the year, which is COVID misinformation. We also talked about Republicans, Florida Republicans, backing the effort to get the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn the presidential election. We heard about dark money influencing state Senate races here in Florida. And I'll tell you what some listeners have been writing in to say. Jim in St. Pete Beach writes, Trump, Giuliani, and the House Republicans should all be tried on sedition and treason charges. This detrimental act to our democracy is damaging and dangerous and needs to be addressed to stop future damaging disruption. That's Jim's opinion out there. And let's see, Dick writes in this. He says, these Republicans that supported the Texas lawsuit violated the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, Section 3. And that amendment, I'll just read it. It says, in part, no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the U.S. or under any statute, who having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the U.S. or as a member of any state legislature, or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the U.S., shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. So that's part of the 14th Amendment, Section 3. Well, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. The phone number here at WMNF is 813-239-9663. 813-239-9663. And we can talk about what you've heard so far. I think the big story coming out of Washington, D.C. is the one that the New York Times and others have been reporting. And I'm just going to read a from Yahoo News. They've compiled all the sources that are reporting this story, and it is quite concerning, let me just say. So I'll read the article. President Trump held a heated, chaotic meeting in the Oval Office over several hours Friday night, and the senior White House officials present were alarmed that Trump was entertaining extreme ideas to overthrow an election he lost by more than 7 million actual votes and 74 electoral votes. This is according to several sources talking to the New York Times, Axios, and CNN. Lawyer Sidney Powell was there pushing her international conspiracy theory about voting machines, and also recently pardoned former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn was in attendance at the meeting, the sources said. 2 days before the meeting, Flynn had suggested on Newsmax that Trump essentially declare martial law, sending the U.S. military into swing states to make them rerun the presidential election. At one point in the meeting on Friday, Trump was asked about the idea, the Times reports. It wasn't clear whether or not Trump endorsed the idea of martial law, CNN adds, but others in the room forcefully pushed back and shot it down. Trump is reportedly seriously considering hiring the attorney Powell, who was pushed off his legal team a month ago, in some sort of special counsel role at the White House with top-level security clearance. White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, Counsel Pat Cipollone, and others at the meeting forcefully pushed back against that idea and others, including against Rudy Giuliani's plan to forcibly seize states' voting machines. A source familiar with the meeting told Axios it's basically Sidney versus everybody. That is why voices were raised. There is literally not one MFer in the president's entire orbit, his staunchest group of supporters and allies, who doesn't think that Sidney Powell should be on the first rocket to Mars. Powell was seen leaving the residence of the White House shortly before 9 p.m. last night, CNN reports. The New York Times' Maggie Haberman adds that Powell was there once again pitching an executive order on seizing voting machines, but didn't necessarily meet with Trump. So that's what's out there. And, this idea of declaring martial law, forcing the swing states to rerun the election and seizing voting machines. What do you think about that? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. And let's take some calls from listeners. Let's go to Chris in Sefner. Chris, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Hey, good morning, Rob.
Good morning. What's up?
Hey, I've been pondering this thought since the election. If Donald Trump hadn't suggested from the start that the election was going to be rigged, or it was going to be a lot of fraud, do you think if Joe Biden and Kamala Harris won, people would accept that election and we just move right on with the transition?
I think most people, I could be wrong, but I think most people in the country, and I'll have to look for a good poll, but I think most people accept the results of the election. Now, there are a few. I think President Trump doesn't accept the results. And I think Rudy Giuliani doesn't. This attorney who met in the White House, Sidney Powell, apparently doesn't accept the results. Our attorney general here in Florida, Ashley Moody, apparently doesn't accept the results. Most of the members of Congress who are Republican here in Florida don't accept the results. But I think otherwise, everybody kind of accepts the results. I think it's a good point. Had President Trump not foretold that there would be problems with the election, his supporters might be a little bit less inclined to agree with him. I do think that's a good point. But I think most of the country sees things pretty clearly. I think it's President Trump who doesn't see things clearly.
True. That was my question, my observation. Thank you very much.
No, it's a good one. The president did say that there's going to be problems with the election, especially with mail-in voting. Chris, thanks a lot.
Yes, sir.
All right. Good to hear from you. We've got an open line, 813-239-9663. And our email address is dj@wmnf.org. But I'm just wondering, you know, when this idea that Michael Flynn is suggesting that Trump declare martial law and send the U.S. military into swing states to make them rerun the election, and you've got an attorney who's close to President Trump saying that election machines should be confiscated, where are we headed? I mean, the president's still in there for another 29 days or so. What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And who on the Republican side is standing up? Which prominent Republicans are standing up here in Florida and saying, you got to stop this? Who's doing that? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Ian's in Bradenton. Ian, thank you for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey there. Long-time listener, first-time caller. This is very exciting. So as far as what you're talking about here goes, I say go for it because I think what's happening around here is pretty bad. You know, we should just tear it down and start over. So, you know, Take it from there, y'all. I don't really know.
What do you mean, go for it? Tell us what you mean when you say go for it.
I guess by go for it, like him trying to overturn this election with the electoral votes and all that. Yeah, that's definitely spooky. But yeah, I don't know. Go for it, because you know, we have a lot of privileges that we enjoy here in the United States. But overall, in my opinion, I think it's really bad for us as people, mentally and physically and spiritually. So,
all right, Ian, thanks a lot. Thank you for that. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Dave in Tampa. Dave, thank you for calling. What do you think about this idea of declaring martial law?
Oh, that's horrific. What I wanted to say was I think that the voting machine manufacturers ought to be suing Sidney Powell and Giuliani for libel. Well, it seems like there is just a, you know, textbook case of libel going on here. I think Fox recognizes it, too. They ran those kind of pre-recorded pieces on Lou Dobbs' show and I guess Jeanine Pirro's show that absolutely refuted the line that they've been towing about how these voting machines were, you know, the companies were all in cahoots with the non-existing conspirators to, you know, cheat the election. And, you know, there's real damage there. If you think about it from a commercial standpoint to the reputation of these companies, it seems like they've got a really solid case. And they ought to be going after the publishers, the broadcast companies, and the individuals that are libeling them. Because as I recall, libel is knowing falsehood repeated with malicious intent. And boy, that sure seems to be the case here.
Yeah, that's an interesting strategy. All right, Dave, thanks a lot. Thank you for that.
Yep.
All right. 813-239-9663. Yeah, you've got to say something that's false. You've got to know it's false and that you've got to do it with the intent of, I think, causing harm. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Let's go back to the phones, and thanks to Frank Knox. He's our phone producer today. Let's go to Carl in Dunedin. Carl, thank you for calling. What's up?
Hi. Well, the military has already told Trump that, first of all, it's against the law. It's against the Constitution. But the military has already told Trump that they're not going to do his bidding. And you know,
I think the Army said that. I don't think we've heard from all four branches, but yes, the Army did put out a statement. Secretary of the Army did.
That's true. You know, after the Vietnam War, the military wasn't, by a lot of Americans, wasn't held in very high regard. And after 9/11, you know, they're revered. You know, And, you know, I don't think the military wants any part of this. And having a disgraced military officer suggesting that the military step in is pathetic. But my last comment is, if the U.S. military goes into any state in this country and harms the U.S. populace, the rioting will make 1968 look like a walk in the park. The damage to people and property will be something most people who are alive today never contemplated. That's my comment.
All right, Carl, thanks for your thoughts. 813-239-9663. James writes, Trump is afraid of what will happen once he loses his job and has no power. That's James' explanation of what's going on. And let's go to John in St. Petersburg. Hey, John, you're on MNF. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Rob. At this point now, is a lot of bluster from Trump and Flynn and anyone else that'll just hang on. They're all looking for a gift from him, you know, in the way of pardons and whatnot. He will definitely be, you know, removed from the White House if he doesn't physically just go himself. But to the other point that you had hit before, very quickly, I work with a fellow who is the epitome of a Trumper. Good, bad, or indifferent, that's who he is. And I asked him a question the other day, and I said, you know, when all this COVID stuff started, way back, I said, if the president had gotten on the TV and said, I need everyone to wear a mask, this will save lives, we're in a major pandemic situation, blah, blah, blah. He said, oh, yeah, I would definitely wear one. I wore one. I said, will you wear one now, you know, when Biden takes over? He says, no, absolutely not. Biden's just a 40-year-long politician. That's the mindset of what the people that you're dealing with, you know, so... Nothing surprises me, and Trump could have won the election if he had played it like an actual United States president. He probably would have won re-election, you know? So anyway, that's just, I thought that was an interesting point.
So John, are you saying that your friend who's a Trumper...
Don't say friend.
Okay, sorry.
Acquaintance,
I'm sorry. Are you saying that they basically just follow whoever the leader of the party is? They follow Trump, yeah. All right, John.
Absolutely.
John, thank you. Thank you for that.
Okay,
all right. Take care. Let's go to Francisco in Sarasota. Hi, Francisco. What are your thoughts?
Hi. Well, you know, it's curious. Of course, Trump said, if the only way I can lose the election is if it's rigged. So I wonder what he would have done if he would have won the election. But, you know... Rob, the problem is, and I heard a very cogent remark on one of the shows yesterday, and was that we have, because of the media outlets, we have two alternative realities going on now. You know, the Kellyanne Conway comment that there are alternative facts, and Rudy Giuliani saying that truth isn't truth. You know, it's 1984. It's Orwellian to the degree that I've never seen before, but it definitely, I think, is the most important effect and the most important thing that's going on right now is that we basically have two different realities, two different belief systems, and facts don't matter.
Francisco, let me ask you, there are a lot of major advertisers that advertise on Fox and some of the conservative websites and a lot of the talk radio shows that push these ideas, COVID misinformation, for instance. What does it say about those advertisers that support Fox and allow Tucker Carlson to go on and, you know, push conspiracy theories about vaccines and then turn around the next day and get a vaccine? Don't those advertisers have some responsibility?
Well, ideally, yes. But what we've learned about capitalism in America is that as far as the corporations are concerned, the bottom line is God. And, you know, this has been going on for a while. And I don't see it changing unless there's some regulation that's put on to, you know, to these corporations and the amount of money they can pump in general, not only in advertising, but in the political system. If we don't do something about that, this is just a cancer that, you know, has many, many, metastasizes into every area of our lives, you know. So it's a big problem. Thank goodness, I would say, that since the executive branch was compromised and the legislative branch seems to have been compromised, we had one hope was the judiciary branch, and that sort of held, and you know, so far. And thank goodness for that. That's all I can say.
Yeah, there was a great line over the weekend. Somebody said that the U.S. Supreme Court is not part of the deep state, even though it has a 6-3 conservative majority. But even they didn't buy into the conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
That was good to see.
Francisco, thanks a lot. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
And let's go to Kateria. Kateria, did I pronounce your name right?
No, it's Kateria, but that's...
Kateria, okay. Yeah. Hi, Kateria.
Hi, I just had one question. I don't know how martial law works, so I would like to know what that implies and what happens if that does happen, because I don't know.
Well, generally, martial law, and it's really been rarely used in the U.S., at least in our lifetimes, but it implies that civilian rule is suspended. So your local police department, your county commission, your city council, your mayor, they would no longer have authority. The sheriff, local sheriff, would no longer have authority in the area, and that the military would move in and be in control of that area.
Hmm. Oh, that's not good. Okay. Okay, well, thank you.
All right, Kateria, thanks a lot. And we're talking about a story that was reported by CNN, Axios, and the New York Times, in which former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn attended a meeting at the White House on Friday, and Flynn had suggested earlier last week that Trump essentially declare martial law, sending the U.S. military into swing states to make them rerun the election, and that idea was apparently brought up at a meeting at the White House last Friday. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Lori in St. Petersburg. Hey, Lori, you're on M&F. What's up?
Hey, Rob. Actually, I have a different question. I'm not seeing a lot of coverage regarding the mutation of the coronavirus in Britain. And I don't know if you know much about it, but I'm just curious whether the current vaccines will be effective against this new mutant coronavirus.
Yeah, you're right. In England, this has broken out. I know the BBC has had good reports about it. I don't know what the vaccine's effectiveness is against this new strain of the coronavirus. And I, because the story just broke yesterday, if I remember correctly, I think in the next 24 hours, we're going to see some really good reporting from people on the ground there in England who can tell us that question. So I understand your frustration. I think it's the important question. And then the worry, of course, is will this strain come to the U.S.? So a lot of countries are saying that they don't want flights from England coming into their country. I suspect that on the NPR News in about 5 minutes, we might hear something about it. I'll see if I can find something quickly, though. But it's a really important question. I don't have the answer.
Yeah, and it apparently is the transmission rate is apparently, quote, significantly faster.
That's correct. That's right.
Okay. That's right. And then just one other thing regarding the validity of the election, and I've said this before on your show, I have never once heard a reporter since he started talking about that this election, that Trump started talking about that this election might be rigged. Not one reporter ever said, you created a committee in 2018, which disbanded because it found no fraud in the 2016 election because his ego was so upset that he didn't win the popular vote. They put this committee together, and they disbanded because they found no evidence of fraud. But not one reporter I have ever seen has put that to
to him. Yeah, you appointed Chris Kobach to head this committee or be on the committee, and that's a guy that Greg Palast has been exposing for 4 or 5 years, and Greg Palast has been on this station, including my show, talking about that. Yeah, that's really important. People should look that up.
Yep. Okay. Okay. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, Lori. 813-239-9663. You're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. And let's go to, let's see who's been holding the longest. It looks like Sudesh in St. Pete has been holding the longest. Sudesh, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. That's a comment I have. Actually, 4 years ago, I made a comment after the show and you played it on air. What we're experiencing now is what I commented about. Possible takeover by the government. I mean, present. We might end up like Venezuela. That's what I have to say. Thank you.
Okay, Sudesh, thank you. Thank you for that. End up like Venezuela. What do you think? Let's go to Mark in Tampa. Mark, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, Rob. I just remembered that I distinctly heard Mitch McConnell quote that he guaranteed a smooth transition of power. So I'm going to hold his feet to the fire on that one.
Yeah, let's hope he stands up against martial law. All right. Mark, thanks a lot. Thank you
You're welcome.
And let's go to Jimmy in Winter Haven. Hey, Jimmy, you're on M&F.
Hey, how you doing, Rob?
I'm good. What's going on?
I wanted to make a comment about this attack on the Dominion voting machine.
Yeah.
You know, we have to be very careful. You know, Donald Trump was bragging about how Ivanka could be America's first female president. At the same time, October of last year, Ivanka got licensing agreements from China for Trump-branded voting machines.
So what's your source on that? I believe you, but tell us where you saw that or read that.
Rob, I read that about a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, we'll have to look that up.
Yeah, but it said October of 2019, she had got this license agreement for Trump-branded voting machines from China.
Uh-huh.
That license agreement. So we got to be very careful if this is the case. You know, they're attacking the Dominion machines. So, you know, you can look at the scenario where they might want to put in their own machine. You know, so it's a very scary scenario.
Yeah, with Trump-branded voting machines. I wonder how many people would trust those.
Exactly.
All right. Jimmy, thanks a lot.
All right, Rob.
All right, good to hear from you. And let's go to Jack in Apollo Beach. Hey, Jack, you're on. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I am a registered Republican voter, but I was also a Republican voter against Trump. And what I'm shocked at right now is that no one, apparently, in the state of Florida, with the exception of maybe you, is calling out the Republican voters who do not support this stupidity. I think, and I wouldn't know how to do it, but I think somebody should organize, and there should be people out in the streets protesting, just like the Black Lives Matter, to stop the stupid with everything that's going on right now. I have contacted our governor and both our senators by email, and all I got back was the obligatory, meaningless email responses that they probably never even saw my email. And that's I can't believe people aren't being more vocal.
Jack, do you have many friends who share your views who are Republican?
Yes I do. I wouldn't say a lot of them. Most of them aren't vocal. So it's like they have... they say one thing when it's in a big group, and then they say something else when it's just a couple people. And I think that's pervasive in the whole country. I think that's kind of the way it is. I think the real hardcore loyal supporters of Trump are a very small number. I think they're probably 10 to 20% of the Republicans. I think the rest know the truth. They just won't say it.
Out of fear of what might happen.
And our two senators and our governor are just plain cowards.
Yeah, they're under the covers. They're in bed and they're under the blankets. Jack, thank you very much. I wish we had more time, but we're out of time. Thank you.
All right.
Great to hear from you. And if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813 238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Sean Cadan. He's coming up next. This is 88.5 FM WM.